men. Am I on? Oh, yes, I am. Okay. And Alex, have you got my... Brilliant. Okay, thank you. For those of you who don't know, my name's Peter. I'm married to Lynette, who is here just now. And I want to tell you about our first date. It was 25 years ago, so memory's a little hazy. But 25 years ago, we were talking over dinner at university, and Lynette asked me a question. She said, "Have you ever tried Chinese food?" I admitted I hadn't. So she said, "Why don't we go out for dinner sometime?" She meant we, the eight people sitting on the table. I thought she meant we, the two of us. So before she could change her mind, I very quickly said, "I'm free on Friday." So she sort of swallowed hard and got her first date with me out of a mistake. The evening was perfect. The whole thing just was absolutely fantastic. Lynette came to help at our kids' club first on the Friday evening, and then we went for this meal together. We spent 3 hours going through all the different courses and just enjoying each other's company, discovering how much we had in common, even though we grew up in different countries. On the way home, it started snowing. And Lynette, being from tropical Singapore, had never seen snow before. You know, I'd like to have claimed that I organized that, but it just happened. And it was just, she was totally enchanted. And I took her back to her flat. I went back to mine, and I kind of floated into bed. Our second date wasn't quite so good. I think by this point, we were officially an item. So I was a little bit tense, and so was Lynette. And we were wanting to get it right. And just somehow, the whole evening didn't quite go according to plan. It didn't help that on our first date, Lynette had shared the bill. But on our second date, according to her culture and custom, she thought that she would offend me by offering to pay the bill, so she didn't. So I ended up paying for the whole thing. Now, is that it? Is that what happens? Everything's wonderful and amazing at first, and then it kind of, you get down to reality. No, of course not. What we discovered at first was real. And so because it's real, it's lasted and it's deepened and it's strengthened over time. I do remember my first time in church after I became a Christian. And I have to say, I was blown away. It just felt perfect. I sat next to my old history teacher, who couldn't have been more happy to see that I'd come to faith. I so drank in every word that people said, that every song just lifted my heart. I didn't want to go home. I couldn't wait till the Sunday after, or the Sunday after that. And for that period of time, church was fantastic. But has it always been that way? Of course not. I sat through some pretty ropey sermons and some, church life just kind of happens. And, you know, it's not always perfect, is it? Does it mean to say that it's all just downhill after that? No. Because what I tasted was real. And because it's real, it grows, deepens, and strengthens. But I want to read out the church's honeymoon period. It'll come up on the screen, hopefully. But you may want to find it in Acts chapter 2, verses 40 to 47. Acts chapter 2, verses 4 to 47. With many other words, he, that's Peter, warned them, and he pleaded with them, "Save yourselves from this corrupt generation." Those who accepted his message were baptized, and about 3,000 were added to their number that day. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to everyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who are being saved. So this is the church's honeymoon period. Everything was going great. The There were just about 120 people, but then the Holy Spirit came, and then all of a sudden there were 3,000 or more people, with more people becoming Christians every day. And for a while, everything was brilliant. These believers were hungry to learn. They just wanted to be together. They were eager to demonstrate their real love for each other in radical ways. But then in the following chapters, we read chapters 4 to 8, this honeymoon period didn't last. There were problems in the church. There was sin. There was also tension. There were pressures from outside, persecution, until one of the leaders was arrested, sentenced to death, and stoned. The church scattered. So is that it? The honeymoon is over? All downhill from here? No, because what they'd experienced was real. And so therefore, no matter what was thrown at the church, they grew, even as they scattered. Now in Revelation chapter 2, verses 2 to 5, the Lord Jesus sends a message to the church in a particular place called Ephesus. And the message that Jesus sends through his apostle John is this: I've seen your hard work and your patient endurance. You've patiently suffered for me without quitting. You've done really well. But I have this complaint against you. You don't love me or love each other as you did at first. Or some translations say, you've left your first love. Look how far you've fallen. Turn back to me and do the works you did at first. We've heard some fantastic things already this evening about all the things which are going on. I hope you are as excited as I am about what's happening here. But I have to ask the question, do we feel the way we did? After this initial kind of excitement of planting churches or getting involved in a new fellowship, has the dust settled? Are we now on cruise control? Do we delight in being together as perhaps we once did? Or is the delight of being in church kind of ancient history? I think that if we're going to get back to what actually we've had before, if we are to return to our first love, as Jesus told the church in Ephesus, we need to do something here. We actually need to go back to what the church's honeymoon period was. These few verses that I read out at the beginning, we need to do those things. It should be something that we're always trying to get back to. So I want you to use your imagination that I'm talking to a friend. Maybe we're having coffee together, and he says, what can I do to put the spark back into my marriage? You know, I've been married for a long time now. Things have gone a bit dry. We're really on cruise control. What can I change? Well, the first piece of advice that I would give my friend would be to make the effort. Take the time. Book the restaurant. Get the babysitter. Plan ahead. If you don't, nothing's going to happen. But also, if your heart's not in it, then nothing's going to change. Making the effort is not about being organized. It's about wanting something so much that you'll do whatever it takes to make it happen. In verse 42, we see that the one thing that the early church, a feature of the early church, was devotion. They were committed. Yes, of course, they were a brand shiny new group of Christian believers, but they still had jobs and children and elderly relatives and farms and animals to look after. But they met together as often as they could. They met in the temple courts, probably in the siesta period in the afternoon. They spent time in each other's homes, eating together. They devoted themselves to the teaching of the apostles, to fellowship, to breaking of bread, which is probably communion, but also eating together, and to prayer. There's really no getting around this. If we want to really have that delight and that joy, we want to keep that delight and that joy, we sort of really need to put the effort in. But it's not a kind of, I must do, it's something that comes from the heart. We need to make the decision to put our church life being together, learning together, fellowshipping, praying together, right at the top of our agenda. Sam was on the drums just now. He's 20, but when he was a baby, when he was first born, we emigrated to Singapore when he was just 7 weeks old. And the next week, I got a new job. So it was new baby, new country, new job, new home, and new church. There's a lot of change to go through. And I have to say, it was a real struggle just to get to church. Sometimes we were trying so hard, we'd actually be so tense, we'd end up arguing in the bus on the way there. Don't know if is it just us that this kind of thing happens too? He arrived at the church, you see the door, I'm in no mood to worship, turn around and go home again. But we knew that we couldn't stay like that, that we needed to kind of draw a line in the sand and say, actually, by this point, we're going to really try to get our act together. And eventually we did. These people were committed to each other. But also, they were quite big. I find that we tend to get, we start to moan when we get past about 150, 200 people in a congregation. It's not like it used to be. It's harder to get to know people. I don't know who's new. Don't want to talk to somebody and say, are you new here, to find they've been here for 6 months? I was in a church for 6 years, and on my last Sunday, somebody asked me whether I was new here. I said, no, I'm preaching, and I'm on the leadership, but never mind. They were 3,000. 3,000. But the way that they dealt with it was both to meet together every day in the temple courts, maybe with fairly large numbers, I suppose, to listen to what the apostles had to say, but also in each other's homes. I guess I could say that they didn't see home groups as an optional extra. The second thing I'd say to my friend is value what you have. I'd say, you can imagine you're in the restaurant, the food is on its way, you dress for the occasion, so far, so good. But you don't want to spoil the occasion. You don't want to say something stupid and mess things up, because it matters. And in verse 43, it says that everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. Filled with awe is actually the word to be afraid. Well, they weren't afraid in the sense of wanting to run away, but they had this sense of awe that God was at work and there was no time to mess around. We are God's family, and we should feel comfortable and at ease and happy being here. We don't always have to kind of mind our P's and Q's and be on best behavior. But what we should do is to recognize that here is where God is at work. He's done great things in our lives, hasn't he? He's doing great things. God is at work here. So there should be that sense of awe. Wow, God is among us. But also, that sense of awe comes into the decisions that we make. I have to admit to you that before we started Northway Church of Five, part of me really didn't want to do it. But the thing that really pushed me to doing it was, if this is where God is at work, I don't want to miss out. Third thing I say to my friend would be, show the love. You know, it's no good me booking a fantastic restaurant and buying a bunch of flowers and doing all these things if I've left Lynette to do all the washing up and the cooking and the cleaning the whole week. You know, I need to show by my actions that I love her, not just by some grand gesture. The word love doesn't actually come into this passage because it doesn't need to. It's absolutely obvious all the way there that these early Christians saw that if they were devoted to God, that meant being devoted to each other. And they did incredibly radical things. They sold their property and their land so that they could share with those who needed it. That didn't really happen very much after this. It's very easy to kind of abuse that sort of thing. But it set the tone. It set the right tone. The one thing these early believers were known for was their love for one another. We primarily show our love for God by expressing that practically through our love for one another. Have a look around. Look around at these lovely, beautiful people who are sitting around you. These are the people to whom we show our love for God. There's a lot of giggling going on. Fourth thing. Last thing I'd say to my friend is enjoy the feeling. I don't think it'd go down very well with Lynette if I organise a really posh restaurant and kind of a bunch of flowers, sweet words. I gaze into her eyes, I listen to her every word. And at the end of the evening, she says, "Oh, Peter, thank you so much for organising this evening. I've had a great time." And my response is, "Just doing my duty." Yes, it is my duty. But it is my duty to enjoy. It is my duty to be the one receiving, not just the one giving. The feeling in the early church was one of gladness. They were happy to be there. Gladness and sincerity. What they found was real. And even though that would get tested through all the troubles that were to come, they knew what they had and they delighted in it. And because they had something real, their neighbours and their friends saw that they had something real, and many of them wanted to be part of it too. See, we always think that enjoying something depends on the whole thing going well. You know, if we go on a date, it depends on whether the food is all right or the service is quick enough. Or if I go to a football match, it depends on whether we win or we lose. You know, but actually, no. Enjoying something is a choice. Enjoying being together is not down to whether it's led well from the front or whether the speaker is interesting or really boring or whether the music is to my taste or not. Enjoying something, delighting in something, is a choice I make. They had glad and sincere hearts. So what do we need to do to get back to the honeymoon or to stay with that sense that God is at work among us? How do we switch off the cruise control and get back to pushing the accelerator on? Well, the first thing is perhaps to make the effort to actually decide that my devotion is something that comes from here. That actually I need to put coming here or to BCC or to Northway Church of Fife or wherever as a priority. Is it to value what we have? To recognize that this is not a social club. This is not the equivalent of the Oxford Model Railway Society, not that I've ever been. This is where God is at work, changing people's lives. Do we have that sense of awe that he is here? Is it to do something practical? You know, by giving my time or giving my money or making a serious commitment to help somebody within the fellowship, you know, that helps me to put my heart where it should be. What's the thing that actually I can do to make the difference? Or is it simply, and I don't say this lightly, is it to choose to enjoy being among God's people? Instead of moaning and complaining or saying it's not as good as it used to be, decide to delight in God's people. We're in a great place. We are in a great place. Let's keep it that way. Let's keep it real. Let's keep it fresh. Let me pray. Lord, thank you that you have saved us. Thank you that you are at work among us. Thank you that we are able to delight in the fact that you are doing these things in three estates in Oxford, in Wheatley too. Thank you for giving us the brothers and sisters that we have around us. Thank you that they are now our family. Please help us to do the things that we did at first, to never lose our first love, to always look to refresh our love for you and work out what that means in terms of loving other people. Amen.